Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Unheard. I'm Freddie Sayers. We have done close focuses on a number of countries during the COVID pandemic. South Africa, Australia, the US, all over the place, but we haven't focused very much on Israel. It's a particularly interesting example because they've had a very strong government that's been able to use very strong measures against the virus, and they're actually on their fourth COVID vaccination, the fourth booster, and cases still seem to be rising. I believe there were 37,000 plus cases last night, and that's in a country of 9 million. So something isn't going exactly according to plan. Luckily, here to discuss it with us is one of the foremost authorities in Israel on vaccinations. He is in charge of the immunology department at the Bar-Ilan University. His name is Professor Cyril Cohen, and he's also on the advisory committee for clinical trials for COVID vaccines for the Israeli government. So he has a direct line into the powers that be over in Israel. Hi, Professor.
Hello, Freddie. Thank you for having me.
So it's been such an interesting story, Israel, because we in Europe and in much of the West were really looking to Israel as the kind of example to follow. They were the first with very draconian travel restrictions. They had the fastest initial vaccine rollout. And the idea was with a muscular government, such as Israel has, this virus could be controlled. Now we're a few jabs later, that doesn't seem to be happening. What's your sense of what you've learned?
Yeah, so basically I think that every step that was taken in Israel was a very important step, you know, when we look at the effect of, you know, those steps and also the way that other countries have followed us. So what I would like to say is that today we are in a different phase of the pandemic. We are in a different stage of what we call, you know, COVID-19. Israel, we were the first actually to immunize massively exactly a year ago in January and in February, which enabled us to actually end lockdowns since March, okay? Even before that, from February, we started to reopen our economy, our society. And then we were the first to notice that there was a decrease in the waning of the immunity following the second shot. And that's when we had to decide, and it wasn't an easy decision to decide that we need a third shot or a booster shot. And we did that, and it helped us minimizing the consequences of what we call here the fourth wave. And then Omicron happened, and Israel, I would say, quite intelligently closed its border again, which enabled us to get prepared during a month where we had almost no cases of Omicron here. But again, we cannot delay that indefinitely. And now we have Omicron. A few things that we have learned. First, those vaccines are excellent in preventing, I would say, severe disease, severe cases. But unfortunately, their effectiveness against contamination is reduced. And this is a lesson.
Did that surprise you? You're the kind of top guy in vaccines in Israel. Did you expect the vaccines to be better at preventing transmission than they were?
Yes, I would. I will tell you why. I'm one of a few guys that are really into that matter here in Israel. You know, we thought that what was expected, especially based on what we have seen or what we saw in March, in April. I mean, I have to to tell you, you know, the feeling we had in Israel last spring. We were after a deadly month of January with more than 4,000 people that died. We were after our third lockdown. And suddenly we were opening and opening and opening, and cases were going down. Hospitals were, you know, just getting empty. People were, I'm not joking, my colleagues, doctors were dancing in the corridors out of joy. It's over. So we did believe at that time that vaccines can prevent also transmission. And the data was also in that sense. So what we believe is that, you know, vaccines can prevent transmission perhaps shortly after administered, but not over a long period of time. And therefore, yes, we were surprised to discover at the end of the day that no, the vaccines are not protecting us, they are not causing what we call sterilizing immunity.
The narrative or policies hasn't yet caught up with the reality, because Israel was also famous for being one of the first countries to introduce a green pass or a vaccine pass, yep. Which presumably the principle of it is that you can feel safe in a room full of vaccinated people if it prevents transmission. In a world where it doesn't prevent transmission very much or at all, vaccine passports are not really very relevant. Has Israel caught up with that fact?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's not only myself saying that in, you know, in the medias, you know, in, you know, for the past few months, but, you know, other people, especially with the Omicron, where we don't see virtually any difference. You know, there's a very narrow gap between people vaccinated and non-vaccinated. Both can get infected with the virus more or less at the same pace. But I want to tell you, there is another side to the what we call the green pass. If you take two rooms, one that is full of people that are vaccinated and one full of people that are not vaccinated, and you introduce a virus, the impact at the end of the day on the healthcare system of the propagation of a virus in a vaccinated population or vaccinated room is less, because the vaccine can prevent severe disease than...
But that's just a very different point, isn't it? That's about,
yes,
you know, the impacts on
consequences.
Hospitals. Yeah, but yes. Are you now of the view that vaccine passports should be got rid of, phased out, because they're no longer relevant in the Omicron era?
I tend to think so. And that's also something else. You know, this is, you know, we have to look at the future. We need better vaccines to prevent transmission. I mean, I'm all for a nasal vaccine, for example, that would be able to better mimic the immunity that we get from the disease. And we know, even if the Omicron actually is causing a lot of reinfections, you know, people that were vaccinated and, you know, secondary infections, et cetera, we have to take into account that still the virus is better at immunizing than the vaccine. But
sorry, that means, so you're referring to this natural immunity phenomenon, in other words? So,
to some extent, but that doesn't mean that I am encouraging people to go and get the disease in order to prevent from getting the disease. Mm.
So does Israel still have vaccine passports?
What do you mean?
Does Israel still have a green pass policy?
We do have that, but it's not too much enforced. You know, let's face it, especially now with the Omicron. We even, for example, a few days ago, actually 2 days ago, we canceled the green pass for malls. Okay, there's no longer, I would say, a significance to that step of having a green pass in malls.
You expect it to be cancelled entirely soon?
I believe so. You know, the other, you have also to understand that the green pass is not necessarily, and that's not a secret, it's not necessarily to prevent transmission. It's also to encourage people to get vaccinated. Okay, and I don't want to touch upon the political aspects of the green pass, but this is a reality. So right now, you know, you also get to a point where whoever wanted to get vaccinated got vaccinated. I don't think that there is a point right now in maintaining a green pass, especially in the Omicron era.
Because there are countries in Europe, like Italy, for example, that in the Omicron era are doubling down on these vaccine passports. It's now becoming illegal not to be vaccinated. Children as young as 12 whose parents have decided for them that they're not to be vaccinated are not allowed into shops, not allowed into cinemas. It's getting quite extreme in some of these countries. What would your message be to them at this point in the pandemic?
You know, it's a free world. We are all experimenting to some extent, you know, what's the best strategy to go with or to follow in these times. You know, you can also talk about China that, you know, has a zero COVID policy. I don't know where, you know, it will lead them. But I think that the reality is that the vaccines we have right now cannot, you know, indefinitely prevent transmission, perhaps shortly, but not indefinitely. So I think, you know, there is, if your goal is to prevent transmission, a green pass is not the best way to do it.
You've said, and I'm quoting here, that the Omicron wave will only end after masses are infected. What does that mean?
That means that, you know, a lot of our knowledge on, epidemiological knowledge, immunological knowledge, has shown that the more the population is exposed to a pathogen, the more it becomes resistant because your immune system learns about. But there is a price to pay.
There's a term for that, isn't there, that people used to use?
Herd immunity.
Ah, there it is.
The problem is that herd immunity is a consequence for me. It's not an objective. It's not a goal. Okay, there is a thin nuance here, if I may say so, that people have to grasp. It's not, again, I'm not saying to people go and get infected. I don't think that this is a model that we need to adopt. Okay, you have seen what the meaning of that model is in countries like, for example, Brazil, where you know there were almost no restrictions, and there was a president that was encouraging, actually, and saying, you know, it's nothing, just go get, you know, get the virus, etc. And we know how it ends. So no, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that, especially that if a lot of people are getting, I would say, infected at the same time with a virus that can cause some severe cases, you know, at the end of the day, there are a lot of severe cases. And truth to be told, everyone knows when our hospitals are overwhelmed, the care, the health care that people are getting is less, and more people are dying. That's the truth.
Yeah.
Okay. So we don't want that to happen, you know, at the same time. But yes, you know, with every exposure or with a redundant exposure to a wave and another wave, I think that immunity is building up. I don't want to call that herd immunity because people think that after that, it's over. No, we can always have a new variant that will be perhaps more problematic. But at the level of the population, I'm talking about a general protection.
Let me give an example closer to our home, which is the UK government.
So yes,
we opened up back in July of last year, and that was very controversial. Lots of people thought that was irresponsible and we should have been keeping in lockdowns for a lot longer. It's possible now that during those summer months, we built up higher levels of immunity, at least to Delta, than some of our European neighbours, and therefore had a better experience in the winter. Do you think that is feasible? And if so, should governments include natural immunity or herd immunity as part of an overall strategy?
I understand what you're saying, but the question is always, what is the price that you paid? You know, what is the price that was paid in the UK, okay? There are a lot of unknowns also about long COVID, about PIMS, you know, this multi-inflammatory syndrome in children, consequences of that, I'm just talking about people that died. How many people died a day or are dying a day in Britain, in Great Britain, sorry?
We've had up to 100, 200 in recent weeks. At the very height of the pandemic, we got over 1,000 on one day. But, you know, overall mortality numbers in the UK are better than in a number of European countries. And obviously, there are a lot of other countries that did a lot better than the UK.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, I think that you need to sum up, you know, those numbers and compare them to other countries to, in order to better understand what is the impact of such policies. There will always be a price to pay. What we're all trying to do is to minimize that price.
So as a scientist and as an academic of immunology, has it felt weird the past 2 years that your discipline became so political that concepts like herd immunity that previously were just part of the normal academic syllabus almost became forbidden topics because governments and activists were so keen to push one particular route ahead of others? What's your experience been? Has it been strange?
Let me sum up that in one sentence. If you mix politics and immunology or health sciences, at the end of the day, you get politics. And that's how I felt, you know, often. I can clearly say, you know, myself, having been in touch with, you know, several officials in Israel, that people were receptive. I'm talking about, you know, government members. I can't tell you if, you know, they would have adopted everything we thought was justified or not.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
But on the other hand, I think that in most of the cases, our recommendations were evaluated. I'm not saying, you know, they were actually acted upon or something like that. It's a very interesting, you know, from a social standpoint, social perspective, it is a very interesting, I would say, era. Because you discover that professionals, experts, you know, you have a whole bunch of them with different opinions that we knew that, but the impact of the declarations can have dire consequences on the policy of a defined country. And sometimes, you know, to follow this or that is might be problematic. That's why you need to have as many as, you know, possible voices around you and then take the right decision.
I mean, this is really the big question for me. Do you feel like there was an element of hubris in the idea that governments can control all of this? Where here we are 2 years later, and you are now the guy, you know, top person for vaccines, and you're saying, well, Omicron will only be over when masses and masses of people get it. So we've all been on a bit of a journey, and perhaps where we've ended up is a little bit more humble about our ability to micromanage a transmissible virus like this.
Yeah, no, I hear what you say. It's true that, you know, a lot of people say, I can understand that and I can even agree with that. It's very difficult or it's more, almost impossible to stop a respiratory virus to infect people. We know that. But I think, I don't know if it's hubris, I think that there was a real sentiment, honest sentiment, that we could do better because we also had in mind other coronaviruses that we don't talk about anymore today, like SARS, like MERS, that are respiratory viruses, extremely dangerous, that have a lethality of around 10 to 30%. And there we were able, we as humanity, to stop the spread of those viruses. So I think that's the beginning, as the first steps, we hoped that we would be able to do that. After that, we realized that it's more difficult, but we wanted to limit the spread. And then, you know, you have three possible ways to deal with such a pandemic. One is you do nothing, and we saw the results. Perhaps you will get herd immunity fast, perhaps, but there is a high price. Second, zero COVID policy. I'm not talking about China, but take, for example, Australia and New Zealand that had a very tough, I would say, very tough restrictions. And at the end of the day, we know where they are. And you have the rest of the world that had, you know, some lockdowns and some kind of normal life and then lockdown and then some restrictions to what? To get vaccines, to get treatments, to delay, to flatten the curve. So I think it's very easy to talk today, and it's not over yet. That's also a message. It's not over yet. It's very easy to talk today when we have vaccines and treatments, or some of the treatments, and a variant that is less problematic than the previous variants. But again, but
I guess one way to ask the question is SARS-CoV-13 or, you know, COVID-23, yes. When the next one hits, what would you do differently? Would you, if you're advising the government in Israel, would you be more cautious about suddenly going to lockdowns and transport things?
Yes.
You would. So explain that to me.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think that, you know, one of the, and this is what also Israel is showing right now, okay, that we almost have no measures. Put aside, you know, the green pass. We have no lockdown. Everything's open. Bar, restaurants. You know, we have no, you know, people will behave accordingly. We have people that are vulnerable that say, okay, I won't go out. I prefer not to get out. So I think that we have learned, you know, there is one mistake, I think, that we made, and that I'm extremely sorry for that. You know, we have made a few mistakes, but again, is education. For me, education was the thing we shouldn't have touched. Never. Never.
No school closures, no sending universities home.
Exactly. This will have some repercussions in the future. And that's the thing, you know, I'm extremely sorry about. We know, for example, you know, we closed schools. We know that other countries didn't close schools. And I'm jealous of that. Again, true, you know, especially in Israel, education has such a high, you know, it's such a high priority. I'm sorry that we did what we had to do. Some of us, you know, went and talked to politicians. I remember myself at the Israeli parliament, you know, arguing that, you know, lower grades are not, you know, a danger, you know, if they stay open, et cetera, et cetera. So, again, I think that there are some lessons we have learned, but dependent on SARS-CoV-13 virus. It's so dynamic that, you know, you cannot say, okay, I shouldn't have done a lockdown with SARS-CoV-2. Let's not do a lockdown again with SARS-CoV-13, because possibly if you have a very contagious virus that is also extremely symptomatic, the best thing to do is a short lockdown to kill it off and then to go on with your life.
So you're not promising no more lockdowns for future viruses?
I'm not promising anything, and I'm also not making predictions. Only, you know, in Hebrew, we have a saying that says that prophecy was given to the fool.
Let me ask you to make one prophecy more, and you can reject it if you want, which is, you said that you think the Omicron could be the end of the pandemic.
I don't remember saying that in that way, that the Omicron is the end. I think I said that the Omicron can accelerate our transition to a state where COVID-19 is endemic. I'm not saying that, I don't think, and that's perhaps a prediction, and I hope I'm wrong, but that's a reality. I don't think that COVID-19 is going to disappear from our lives in the years to come. Okay, I think it's going to be like flu. I think it's going to be with bad waves and better waves, with a better immunity at the level of the population, with better vaccines, with better treatment. So I think that in that sense, and I'm extremely cautious, there is a possibility that Omicron will accelerate that transition because of its nature, because of the fact that so far, when people were, I would say, infected with a variant, they tend to be, even with the next variant, more resistant, not fully resistant, as we're saying here, but there are also unknowns. Like, for example, we know that the COVID-19 can infect animals. So there might be a new virus, a variant that will develop in animals, or a recombinant virus. So in the short time, I think it will accelerate. Yes.
Do you think we could have got to this point earlier, this, as you put it, endemic state, had we, in a sense, tried less hard and, for example, allowed younger people at very low risk profile to get it? You know, there is that great Barrington declaration idea, and we interviewed those authors. Do you think those ideas in retrospect have merit?
I can understand them, but I think it's extremely easy to talk 2 years afterwards when you have vaccines and we have a better understanding of what is happening and you have potentially treatments and a variant that is less problematic and less, you know, causing severe disease. So, I mean, I'm not a proponent of let's open everything for the young. That's what we're doing right now, more or less. And let's protect.
So you are a proponent of it now, but you wouldn't have been earlier.
I wouldn't say I'm a proponent. I'm extremely, I have, you know, some reservations and criticism about almost everything. I'm a scientist, of course. But what I'm saying is that in the current situation, to some extent, it makes sense because this is what we are doing. We just, we are saying right now in the news, as people that are, you know, in the news, to the old people, listen, the Omicron is not amenable to control. So for the vulnerable people, even if they are vaccinated, you know, stay safe, stay, you know, at home if you can, et cetera, et cetera. But to say at the beginning, when we didn't know enough about the virus, when we didn't have vaccines, to young people get infected, no, I cannot do that. I have people suffering the consequences right now, you know, working in my lab of a bad COVID infection a year after that with cognitive problem, et cetera, et cetera. So there are also consequences to that.
The world which you're describing, where vaccines are effective at reducing serious illness and death, but ineffective at stopping transmission, does that mean then that everyone should make it a personal choice whether they want to take the vaccine to protect themselves or not? In which case, you know, should we stop this sort of culture war against so-called anti-vaxxers, people who don't want, for whatever reason, to take the vaccine? It feels like it's become an obsession, and they are now the sort of scapegoats. They're the evil people of society. Should we just, now that Omicron is here, leave them alone?
I think that vaccination is a personal choice, and I always say that. I believe it is so. But to that choice has some consequences. And here, there is a problem in the society. If you are over 50, 60, and you're saying, I don't want to get vaccinated, will you be, and I'm going to ask a provocative question, will you be willing to renounce on the possibility of getting taken care of in hospitals? Because if you get into a severe disease, you're 50, 60, and we don't have enough beds to treat people, you will force, and that's a given, you will force doctors to decide, you know, between this 80-year-old person that got vaccinated but is most likely going to die, and this person that has more chances to live even if he's not vaccinated. There are some consequences. I'm not telling anyone what to do. I'm just saying that it's a very complex question.
But then smoking, for example, or...
That's correct. Obesity.
Or motorcycling or any of these things that increase your risk. You know, it's a dangerous road to go down, isn't it, to start withdrawing or making medical treatment conditional on people's life choices.
Yeah, yeah. I fully agree. I told you it's a complex question. I'm not saying that this is a solution I'm advising for or whatever, but I'm just saying that it's not easy to say. What I'm trying to say is that it's only my choice. It's not true. It's not only your choice, okay, to some extent. It's true that it's more your choice when you are younger, and I respect, again, I'm saying I'm for the choice. I think that you need to have the possibility to decide what you want to do with your body. It's a given for me. I'm just saying that when you say it's only my choice, to my humble opinion, it's not true.
Final question for you. It's a bit of a left field one, but you're an expert in cancer as well as immunology.
Sorry.
There's a lot of talk about cancer vaccines. Do you see
Yes.
that being a big part of the forthcoming years?
My field is immunotherapy of cancer. I'm also the president of the Israeli Association for Cancer Research. We have knowledge, I would say, in the past 10 years, 15 years, that the immune system is central, not only against pathogen, but also against cancer. Will we get to a point where we have cancer vaccines? I don't think so right now, because a disease like COVID is not cancer. Cancer is not COVID. These are different things. But I do believe that with a better understanding of the immune system and ways to tweak the immune system, perhaps it's not really vaccine in the purest, sense of the term, but with a better understanding, and immunotherapy is doing that, we will have better treatments for cancer. Yes.
Professor Cyril Cohen, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you very much for that, and thank you for having me.
Let's just take stock of what we've just heard. This is Professor Cyril Cohen, the top man in Israel, or certainly one of them, for vaccines, an advisor to the Israeli government about clinical trials for vaccines, someone who has been throughout the process of COVID-19 advising on these various jabs. He says green passes, vaccine passes, are no longer relevant in the era of Omicron. So let's take heed, those countries that are now doubling down on them. He says that big mistakes were made, that schools and universities should never have been shut, and he apologized for that. And he said that Omicron, current variant of COVID, is likely, he believes, to be part of the end of this pandemic. So it's just a sign of how far we've come. Those of you who've been watching us for the past couple of years will remember how fraught these kind of discussions were with some of the early experts back in 2020. It's a very different atmosphere now, and people seem finally to be converging that living with COVID is the only way to go. Thank you to him, and thank you to you for joining. This was Unheard.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.